You are listening to Pharmacy IT and Me, your informatics pharmacist podcast. Hey everyone, this is Tony Dow with another episode of the Pharmacy IT and Me podcast. Today, my special guest, Dr. Elizabeth Ojo, is going to be on the podcast sharing about her journey into pharmacy technology space and also about what she's doing right now with helping people move from med to tech. So thanks for being on the show, Elizabeth. How are you doing?
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me, Tony. I'm doing great. It's really a pleasure to be a guest here. Just trying to make it through this, you know, this summer in one piece.
Yes. We are recording before summer of 2023 right now. When the listeners hear this episode, it may be a little bit later. But, you know, just for you guys know, we are recording before summer and there's been a lot of like busy work for all of us right now. So
yes.
Yeah. So before the listeners kind of like get to know more about what you're doing now, can you share a little bit more about, you know, your early career path and how you kind of like found that pharmacy technology space?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's a little bit non-traditional for me. And what I like to do is always be honest and be real with how I found myself into this space. Obviously, I'm very passionate about improving, you know, the lives of patients. And something I love about being a pharmacist or getting into pharmacy is the fact pharmacists are like the number one most accessible profession, medical profession in the United States. And there's something really powerful about that and our ability to really interact with patients really as they are. You know, they don't have to make an appointment. They don't have to pay to get our advice, things like that, at least in the retail setting. And that was very, very appealing to me as a high school student. But the majority of it, which is actually funny now I think about it, is, and I think a lot of people relate, my very, very strict Nigerian parents actually wanted me to go to med school and thought that I wanted to go to med school. And I was about 2 years from going to college. And we had a very frank discussion about how I didn't want to go to med school and spend up to 20 years of my life doing more schooling. So in another life, I actually wanted to do computer science, but we kind of compromised on pharmacy school. I went to school here at the University of Georgia and they had an accelerated program. So I was in and out in 6 years. And I'm actually really, really happy that I was able to do this. Like I said, there's a lot of pride that I hold in being a pharmacist and being a clinician and having that expertise. And I really wouldn't have it any other way. I'm really, really proud of the work that I've been able to do so far.
Awesome. Awesome. You know, it's really funny. You were talking about like, you know, the parents' pressure of like going into. Yeah. So it's funny because like for my parents, they actually pressured me into pharmacy. So, and I also wanted to do computer science.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I still ended up doing pharmacy school because actually there was this whole thing for me. I was like, it was music versus pharmacy versus computer science. And computer science, like this is going to like age me, but computer science at the time was not as big because, you know, Facebook was barely starting at that time.
Right.
So it was more like I was convinced to go to pharmacy because computer science wouldn't be a stable career at the time. No one knew. Right?
Yeah. No, I think our parents should meet because they were like, you know, in their head, they were like, well, if you're going to do computer stuff, you should become an engineer. I was like, no, but, you know, I really wanted to do computer science or actually I was briefly thinking about information technology. But, you know, in their heads, everyone has to be a doctor, lawyer, or engineer, or it's not a quote unquote real job, right?
That's exactly the same. Yeah. Yeah. My parents think that way too. Doctor, lawyer, and engineer. So, but yeah, I mean, like, you know, once getting into pharmacy school, like for me, I was able to find that whole technology space. I wonder, like for you, how did that come about? Did you find out during your time in school or was it after? How'd that come about for you?
Yeah. Actually, my very first exposure to the potential for pharmacists to be in this tech space was actually in my final year of school, right? So I think a lot of pharmacy students would relate to this is the fact that going through school, the only thing that we hear about is either retail or working as a clinical pharmacist inside of a hospital setting. And maybe you hear a little bit about industry or the pharmaceutical industry. So it was the second half of my final year of pharmacy school. One of the hospitals I was doing one of my last clinical rotations at, they were actually switching their EHRs from Cerner to Epic. And it was through that rotation that I first heard of the term, you know, informatic pharmacist or, you know, a clinical application coordinator. And that person happened to be a pharmacist, a hospital pharmacist who had been given the responsibilities of overseeing the pharmacy or medication work for that specific hospital as they were transitioning to Epic. So that kind of was the first time it really entered my mind that, there are PharmDs out there whose work includes more than, you know, verifying orders and fulfilling medications and prescriptions and things like that.
So, you know, when you found that out, did you kind of seek out like other types of roles too that were in like adjacent to that, like industry or, you know, from the managed care side?
No. So, finally at pharmacy school, what's funny is I came across that and then it kind of just left my mind for months because at the time I was convinced, like 100% convinced that I was going to go into pharma, go into industry. So at that time I was like, oh, that's kind of interesting. And then I completely forgot about it. And here's where the turning point started to happen because what ended up happening is I didn't get a fellowship. I didn't get an offer. And I had to sort of sharpen my focus into, okay, well, now I just need to get a job post-graduation. And I started working as a staff pharmacist, as a floater, actually, at CVS. So it wasn't until I finished my boards and started working as a retail pharmacist that I realized, okay, I've got to get out of here. I'm licensed. I need to do something else. And that's when, you know, every single second of every minute of every day that I had that wasn't inside of the pharmacy, I was on LinkedIn and all of these different job boards just trying to find any non-traditional opportunity. And it just so happened that I found a clinical project manager role at Epic, one of the major EMRs. I just stumbled across it and I put in an application and next thing I know, the rest is history. I've had this question come up before of people asking me how I found it and or how I got this first role. And I really think it was just kind of a right place, right time. I had been primed by learning about EMRs through my clinical rotation where they were switching over. But I somehow, the LinkedIn algorithm just pushed that job to me and the rest is history. Like ever since I took that position, I've now been open to this whole world of clinical informatics outside of the hospital. And, you know, that's sort of been like the catalyst to this whole new world that I'm now part of.
That's really cool. It's so interesting how you just applied and, you know, with your experience, you know, working at that transition in your internship, like, how did that happen? Like, I guess, like, did they share with you, like, what made them choose you to work for Epic?
No, that's a great question. So I am pretty privileged in the fact that I do interview well, but the main thing that makes Epic just a little bit unique is that they tend to hire new grads, not necessarily clinicians, but they are used to sort of dealing with or having to manage the hiring process for new grads. And in addition to that, they also have a number, not a large number, but they also have a number of pharmacists on staff in the clinical project manager role. And I think what was a little bit different about this role is that they weren't necessarily hiring someone. Like if you look at the requirements for the job, you don't have to have a technical background. You don't have to know anything about healthcare. You just have to meet certain requirements. And the requirements were, do we think you'd be a good employee, right? Do you have good communication skills? Can you complete projects? Are you willing to travel? Are you willing to move to Madison, Wisconsin? So after I was able to get through, you know, whatever luck got my a resume picked, I can say that I was able to leverage my, I will say, superior interviewing skills probably to move along in the process. And yeah, I mean, I was actually one of the most like fastest interview processes I've been a part of from start to finish. I probably got an offer within about 4 weeks. So again, I think really, truly, it was the right place, right time. And the fact that I came in with just, you know, already having a healthcare background and they were looking for someone specifically to staff up their pharmacy implementation team.
Oh, wow. That's cool. I mean, that is true too. Like the interview skills do bring people a long way. So knowing that, you know, knowing that kind of helped you, that's That's also why, like, I think it's important for students to have the, a lot of like interview practice, regardless of what role it is, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Especially because the things, the, so we develop these skills already as a pharmacist, but we're not necessarily aware of how to communicate, right, in the right way, right? So, you know, throughout school, academia prepares us to communicate skills that they think are relevant for residency, right? So, you know, how well can you do research and digest, digest research and put together, you know, interpret guidelines and put together orders and work up patients. Those are those kinds of things that are very important pharmacy skills. But even the process of doing those things, we develop really, really important corporate type skills as well, right? So managing multiple deadlines, managing multiple projects, being able to communicate complex information in simple terms, being able to, you know, time organizational skills that we're not aware are can be like translatable skills that you can and should be talking about in these interviews in these like non-traditional settings.
Yeah, I think like the mock interviews that, you know, pharmacy schools provide, when I was a student, I didn't see as many students take advantage of that. And me too. Like, I didn't take advantage of a lot of them. But I think like after graduating and being part of like local orgs and seeing like how the real world is, I feel like, you know, it's one of those things, right? Like, people can tell you, and you're a student, people tell you how important it is. It's sometimes a little bit hard to really fully grasp that until you kind of see it in the real world.
Yeah. Yeah. And my last year of pharmacy school, and then we can definitely move on. Thank you for humoring me. But in my last year of pharmacy school too, I had the privilege of having a leadership role within like a higher executive leadership role with the student organization, with NAFA. So in that final year of pharmacy school, I'd also been developing all of these, you know, communication skills and email management and, you know, following up with people and executing projects and all these things that are highly applicable beyond, you know, beyond school, because those were the kinds of skills that these organizations want to see. So, you know, to any students listening now, it is so, so important to go after these sort of leadership roles, not just because they look good on your resume, they do, but also because you start to really develop these skills outside of the context of academia, right? So, you know, when you're on, you know, an executive team for a student organization or just a leadership position, you have to be accountable to yourself and to whoever your chapter president is, or maybe the national president. You have to be accountable to executing projects, to following up with members, to thinking of initiative ideas, to going to events, maybe managing a budget, all of these things that are super, 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 super important that you can brag about and talk about in interviews.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And, you know, just switching gears back to, you know, your role at Epic, I know, you know, there's things that you can't say specifically, but, you know, as, you know, what you did there, like, I guess, what are the some of the, you know, coming into it as a brand new person to Epic, to an EMR system, right? Like, what are the things that kind of open your eyes to, like, what, you know, what is it, what's occurring in the back end, how important it is to have a pharmacist in that role?
Great question. So my role as a clinical project manager was to go out to customer sites, usually hospitals, who have purchased the Epic software and need to customize and configure it and make sure it has all of their specific details in the system before they actually turn it on for the first time. So when we think of a typical inpatient pharmacy, right, there are 1,000 different things going on all at once. And some way, somehow, all of those details need to make it into the software so that when pharmacists are using it, it makes sense. Think about gathering all of the medication lists and the hospital formulary in a typical inpatient pharmacy. Think about all of those NDCs, having to gather all of those. Think about configuring the drug-drug or drug-allergy interactions when you're reconciling a patient's medical history. Think about how you handle aminoglycoside dosing. All of these different considerations are a little bit different at each hospital, each organization, and all of those little details need to be put into the system. So imagine my surprise when I got to Epic. And all of my colleagues, all but a few, did not have any healthcare experience. So Epic, as a company that has about 10,000 employees, maybe a little bit more at this point, and there were only a handful of us that were pharmacists, maybe five or six at the top of the range, you know, most, and then maybe about a dozen or so nurses and MDs. So in a company of 10,000 people, there were at most 20 clinicians. That really blew my mind, because the whole crux of my job was going out to these hospital sites and having really in-depth discussions with the pharmacy director and the pharmacy manager and the ordering technician about everything to do with all of their medications and how they handled hospital protocols and, you know, prescribing guidelines and how to put that into the system. So without a doubt, I had an edge over my coworkers from day one. I mean, I didn't have to spend 6, 7, 8 months learning about how healthcare worked, about how a hospital worked, about the importance of, you know, gathering a medic, you know, doing med recs for a patient and making sure that that workflow worked. I mean, I was easily able to excel above, you know, my colleagues for those first couple of months, because all I had to do was learn about the software and the settings. I didn't have to learn about healthcare. So I definitely had that edge, but it just shocked me to be in that environment and not be among clinicians. I don't know why, but I thought that these software vendors, they make software for clinicians. Why aren't there more of us in these roles? It just didn't make sense to me.
Yeah, and I think it's the same way at Cerner. When I was, because, you know, we use Cerner, and I'm in contact with a lot of the Cerner, our Cerner contacts, I guess, our counterparts there. And it's similar. A lot of the, I guess they're called delivery consultants, which are the ones that work on that specific solution, like pharmacy solution or something with us. Like, they're not pharmacists. They're actually, you know, pharmacy technicians, or maybe not even pharmacy technicians. But actually, it's funny. I think a couple of years ago, one of the people we worked at work with is a pharmacy license, a pharmacy technician license. That's what they had. But that was like an internal program at Cerner where they received
it. Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So then it was a little bit interesting to hear that, because it was like, okay, well, they don't have, you know, the practice experience. It's, you know, it's more like book experience. And
yeah.
And, you know, not to say it's bad, but it's definitely not ideal, you know?
Yeah. Especially because a good portion of my role was not just gathering, like doing the information gathering, but a really significant portion of it was also completing trainings, right? And putting together the training material for the pharmacists and the technicians and, you know, maybe some nurses, depending on what we're training them on. So there's a whole level, like there's a whole nother level of credibility that you bring to the table when they see that, oh yeah, we're being trained by our own, you know, rather than some, you know, random, you know, 20-year-old new grad with a bachelor's degree in, you know, whatever. At least it's another pharmacist who's trained.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's interesting, because then, you know, that is the case too. Until like we actually request training from the vendor, then they do send someone out that is more likely, you know, someone that is healthcare trained too.
Good.
So it's just, you know, I'm not on the vendor side. So it's interesting for me to kind of hear about like the structure and how it's operated from that side.
Well, I think, well, here's the thing. Anytime I have a discussion with folks on both sides, either the employer or the clinician side, and I ask them this question, everyone is like, oh yeah, it would make sense for us to add more clinicians to our team. I just think there has been historically this disconnect, right? Because everywhere where we get trained to become a clinician, there is this, you know, narrative that you graduate and then you work in a hospital, right? Or you work in a direct patient-facing role. So there hasn't necessarily been a huge demand from clinicians to join these tech teams, right? To be in this health tech industry. And that's, you know, part of what I'm wanting to change, right? Every single one of us, right, has at one point or another been extremely frustrated by how our clinical systems work. There's just something about it that's like, man, this really doesn't make sense. Well, guess what? We can have a voice and we can be part of the process or have a say at the point at which the software gets made, by joining these teams and maybe getting to even be part of the conversations with these developers as they're creating the software for us to use.
Yeah, it's so interesting to hear the rationale. I mean, we're not really knowing what the rationale is, but, you know, like hearing how it's structured and, you know, some of the things that it may be structured differently if the leadership included more clinicians, right? When there's more like say on like how that can be done more efficiently and effectively with the right people. And, you know, I don't really know because like I think Epic is led by, it is led by clinicians, right?
Not founded by clinicians, no. But, well, actually the founder and CEO, Judy, her husband is a physician. So they definitely have physicians in the family, but Judy is traditionally, she is from a computer science background. Epic does its best to bring in clinical expertise, of course. So every install, for example, will tap people at the hospitals to be subject matter experts, right, within their department to help develop, you know, how and get a say in how their workflow looks like within application. But if we're talking about full on Epic, you know, employees, like I said, it's really like maybe 20 of us total out of a 10,000 person company. And some of us clinicians at the organization do eventually gain senior leadership positions. But to say it's built by clinicians, I don't know would be fully accurate.
I see. Okay. So we've been talking a lot about Epic, but we should probably move on to something else. I do want to like talk about your two other roles before we kind of talk about your MedTech Pivot website. Yeah, so you also moved over to BrightMD at some point. And BrightMD, from my understanding, is a type of virtual care system or solution. Mm-hmm. So I guess, like, what was your role in working at BrightMD? Like, how does your experience as a pharmacist or how does your experience at, you know, a vendor like Epic kind of play into, like, how you were working at BrightMD?
Absolutely. So I worked at BrightMD. You're correct. It's an asynchronous telehealth solution. And I work there as a clinical product specialist is the title they gave me. Alternative names could also be solutions architect or sales consultant. So what I would do is get pulled into calls with prospective customers. So a lot of sales calls for times that they had a lot of questions about how the product worked. So our amazing sales staff would be in the middle of engaging with the customer and there would come at some point a really, really in-depth discussion about, you know, how does the product work? Why is it good for the clinicians? You know, what are its benefits? And more importantly, how does it interact with our EHR of choice, Epic, Cerner, MEDITECH, those kinds of systems? So I would get pulled into these conversations and I would get to do demos of the product. I would answer highly technical questions from hospital leadership about the product, about how it interacts with Epic, about how it interacts with Cerner, what it could do, maybe some of its limitations. And then I would just do my best to answer those questions and take any feedback that they were giving me back to the development team to confirm, you know, so that the development team knew what prospective customers were asking for as features for the product. Now, I really, really enjoyed this work because, you know, I'd been at Epic for about 3 years. And if you know anything about an Epic install, you know it takes anywhere from 1 to 2 years long. So you are, you know, in the trenches. You know, there are lots of high highs, but also a lot of low lows with, you know, the same group of people for sometimes years, you know, completing this project and really, really trying to get to the finish line. And in my role at BrightMD, what I loved was I would get to have really, really intense, amazing conversations with customers. And then I never had to talk with them again. You know, I would kind of have this conversation with them and then send them on their merry way and, you know, have my colleague continue to lead them through the sales process. But it, you know, there wasn't sort of like that emotional burden that came with having to sort of wrestle with a really, really long-term project for a really long amount of time. So I really, really appreciated that and highly recommend.
Oh, it's kind of like, it reminds me of some of the folks that they really like consulting on an EHR implementation. Cause then they, you know, or maybe a small project. Cause then once they're there, this is what I've been hearing is that as a consultant working on an EHR project or working on a small implementation, your job is provide your experience and recommendations and do some of the work. And then once you leave, it's kind of like all on them and you kind of just continue to your next thing. And and then it kind of removes a lot of the politics that are sometimes involved.
Right.
So, yeah. Right. So some of the consultants I know like really enjoy that part because it removes everything that that feels like an unnecessary burden, and mm-hmm. it just focuses on what you know to do, like what you're
exactly. You come in as a specific expert with a specific point of view. You know, people, you have a lot of credibility within that scope, and there is some joy in the scope being pretty narrow, right, into what you're here to do, because it does free you from some responsibility, right? It does free you it's just less stressful overall, and I would highly recommend it. And yeah, I really, really enjoyed that work. And working at BrightMD as well was also my first foray into working at a startup, actually. So, you know, Epic, 40-year-old company, 10,000 people, BrightMD by contrast, under 100 folks and just shy of a decade old. And I really, really loved working there. You know, it really had the startup vibes, you know, an amazing culture, amazing work benefit, you know, similar to tech benefits that you would expect, you know, competitive salary, unlimited PTO, those kinds of things, but just an amazing group of people. And it was just really, really exciting to be part of that culture. And in fact, my next role that I've moved into is also at a startup. And I'm starting to realize I really like working at startup tech companies. And I don't know like that I could go back to these sort of like huge organizations that are basically their own government, not to themselves.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I think so. Yeah. Your next role was actually a product marketing manager at Redox. So I've heard of Redox because I know like our organization was like the IT side was going mm-hmm. to possibly discuss with Redox about something. So I'm aware of it, you know, as a company, but what exactly is it? And I guess, what is your role there?
Great question. I love when someone's already heard of Redox because it is a little nebulous sometimes to have to sort of explain it, but it's what I do for a living. So Redox sits in the space as an interoperability platform, meaning that we help different clinical systems exchange data and make sure that they can talk to each other. So it comes as no surprise that Epic and, for example, Epic and let's say another EHR server have completely different, they're sort of built up from the ground up quite differently. You know, they have different language standards that they leverage. They store data in different ways and they communicate differently. Think, for example, of the differences between Apple and Samsung, let's say. So, but the issue is patients don't necessarily stay or receive care all at the same place, right? So patients frequently will have to go to different facilities that maybe one uses Epic and maybe one uses Cerner and maybe another one uses even a third EMR. And regardless, we want patients receiving the best care possible. And we want all of their clinicians to have access to their full medical record and ideally be able to talk to each other so that it improves the patient outcomes. So what Redox does is help sort of sit as a translation layer between all of these different products so that they can efficiently exchange patient data between each other. And clinicians and doctors can focus on delivering the best care to patients, ideally, and not necessarily have to worry about, you know, faxing and getting up on a phone call or, you know, sending the patient off with the CD of their records. You know, they can just automatically send that to whatever next facility that the patient is trying to get care at. So that's what Redox does.
So that's quite interesting in a way that I'm just thinking, of course, you know, interoperability is a big issue in healthcare mm-hmm. and Redox sits in between to be that kind of like engine for that. But how does Redox, and again, I don't know if you could share this, but how does Redox make it happen in terms of like getting those partnerships with all those different systems out there to make sure, you know, what you're injecting into Redox, mm-hmm. you know, is exporting out correctly and matching up with like some other system out there, you know, from one to, one yeah. to the next.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's our secret sauce, right? So Redox is just shy of being 10 years old. And that is our core product called Nexus. It is the engine that sort of powers it all, right? So even though the Epics and Cerners aren't exactly created the same, there are still sort of standard languages that we expect healthcare data to be sent and retrieved in certain ways. Now, what's interesting is that the main customers that we serve aren't necessarily EHRs trying to talk to other EHRs. It's actually usually software vendors that are trying to talk to the EHRs. So the organization that I left, for example, BrightMD, an asynchronous telehealth platform, where a provider has just delivered care on the telehealth platform may need to get information back into Epic about the patient. Let's say they've just prescribed a new medication. Well, they want to update that the patient's medical record in Epic. So Redox would come in and assist BrightMD in setting up those connections or those pipes about how to send the updated medication record, right, back into Epic so that it matches. And of course, we would also go through an implementation period, right? So Redox implementations are not nearly as long as Epic implementations. They're usually under, you know, they're usually just about a few months. So there's an implementation and testing period where we would make sure all of the right fields are matching correctly. And, you know, we're sending what we intend to send in an expected way. And of course, the main benefit is that, let's say, BrightMD wanted to connect to 10 different hospitals or 20 different hospitals, and they all were using different EHRs. The benefit is that Redox would take care of all those 20 different languages on the back end, and our customer, the telehealth product, whoever the software vendor, would really only have to worry about, you know, maintaining their own code or receiving information in one specific way that they would like to receive it, not having to worry about all the different 20 ways the hospitals are sending it or wanting to receive it.
That's awesome. Yeah. So it works in a way that, you know, everyone's still sitting with like the standards, right? But then you're still trying to make sense of it.
Yeah, exactly. Because it's no small work for a software vendor company to have to do integration. I mean, we're talking about full-time developers who would be fully dedicated just to the sending and exchanging of data to and from EHRs. So when you think about it, a software vendor, they're trying to create the very best solution that they can, that does, that provides like their specific solution. You know, they're trying to be the best telehealth app, the best mental health, the best nutrition app. So they want to devote their resources to doing that work. And Redox can help them do that, right? They don't want to necessarily have to create, you know, be the best integration. That's not where they're making their money, but they need integration in order to communicate with EHR. So that's kind of where we come in and help simplify that process of exchanging the data.
I see. So, you know, and also I want to like also not continue to ask a lot of stuff about Redox.
No, I love it.
Well, I mean, I don't know like what is very specific that you can't really share, you know, so.
Don't worry. Yeah. I'll let you know.
Yeah. So, I mean, just kind of, you know, pulling back a little bit of like, you know, working at Redox, product marketing manager, you know, working at BrightMD, clinical product specialist, those kind of roles, all these roles that you're doing, they're very like non-traditional, not big, exactly what someone would think a pharmacist would do, you know, and they're like tech roles. And I'm trying to pivot into like your next thing, which is like, I just said pivot into, but no pun intended, your med to tech pivot website that you launched.
Yeah.
And I guess, like, can you describe, first of all, what it is, and then talk about why you wanted this to be available for people?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, anyone who has had a conversation with me longer than about 5 minutes knows that I'm super passionate about helping and getting more pharmacists and clinicians into health tech. So, you know, last year, I launched MedToTech Pivot as a way to sort of help bridge that gap between pharmacists and clinicians who are burnt out and are looking to get more into tech, have technical aptitude, are wanting to make a really, really like big difference or have a large impact by helping to work on the software. Maybe they work every day and they know that there is something in their EHR that if only they had a chance to fix, or, you know, they have a great idea for how they can improve the technical processes in their hospital. You know, clinical informatics or health tech is a very, very valid way to do that. So I launched MedToTech Pivot last year as a way to just light up the clinical market and let, you know, really, really smart candidates and really, really smart clinicians, pharmacists, nurses, laboratory scientists, physical therapists, physicians assistants know that we as clinicians are welcome and sought after within these health tech spaces. And not only that, but we're actually in a lot of cases well qualified for these roles, and that we shouldn't be intimidated by the fact that it's in tech. I think the biggest misconception that a lot of people have is that in order to work in tech, you have to be technical. And that could not be further from the truth, right? Even the most technical company in the world, I mean, think of a tech giant I don't know, Facebook or Amazon or Tesla, they need more than just software developers and data analysts and coders. They need a whole host of other people who can come in to talk to consumers about their product, to make recommendations about how to improve the product, to create training materials and do marketing and all of these things that mean you don't have to be technical. And, you know, I say this as a point of pride. You know, I've been in tech now for 5 years and I haven't had to write a single line of code in, you know, in my whole time there. You know, I certainly looked at some of it, but I have my PharmD. I don't have any further certifications. And I've been able to find a lot of great success working in health tech and not necessarily being a super technical person. So I just want to make it very clear and shout it from the rooftops that, hey, this is not only feasible, we are well qualified to take up space and do these roles within this field. So that has sort of been like my push over the last year. And I'm really, really excited to also share some news about where we're going within, you know, year two as well.
Awesome. Before you get into that, I just want to add, like, I do get that question a lot about, like, just even on the pharmacy informatics space, right? Like, do you need to know how to program to become a pharmacy informaticist? And I mean, I tell them it's useful. If you know how to program, right, you understand it, right?
Right.
But even on my team at where I work at, one of the team members, she's a pharmacy informaticist, does not do any type of programming at all. It's all configurations and all, like,
exactly. Yeah. Exactly. I say the exact same thing. I say it doesn't hurt. It really doesn't hurt. But you don't think you have to go out there and spend a lot of money on an expensive boot camp or getting an additional certification to break in. You know, it doesn't hurt, but it's not necessary. Because again, I want to reemphasize, for a lot of these entry level roles, you know, they're really only looking for 3 to 4 things, right? Do you have healthcare experience? Do you have a bachelor's degree? And can you work well in a corporate setting? You know, do you have communication skills, team building skills, leadership skills? Can you manage your time wisely? Can you communicate well? If you can do those 3 broad things, healthcare background, bachelor's degree, and corporate skills, you're probably qualified for a lot of health tech kind of roles. I mean, that's just the reality.
Yeah, yeah. And I do have one more question before we kind of talk about more second year of MedTech Pivot. So my question is regarding the job market right now. And, you mm-hmm. know, with the recent mass layoffs in the tech space, and, you know, some of that is the health tech space as well, and some of that yeah. is, you know, startups and that, all of that. Like, where do you kind of see, you know, people trying to make that move from MedTech? I think recently I heard something like, you know, the great resignation now has become the big stay or something like that. So I don't know, like, do you have any thoughts about that and how that kind of plays into people wanting to get into health tech?
Yeah. Yeah. It is a reality. So the layoffs that we saw last winter in anticipation of this upcoming recession have affected health tech as well, you know, as it did the broader tech market. We weren't impervious to it. In fact, you know, the organization that I'm a part of, you know, we also had to go through layoffs last winter, and it was hard. What I'll say, though, because here's the thing, health tech completely relies on how hospitals are doing, right? Because hospitals are a lot of our customers. So if hospitals are tightening their belt, then, you know, that can lead potentially to health tech companies having to tighten their belt as well. So, you know, we're not impervious to it. But what I will say is that in general, you know, tech tends to bounce back quicker than other affected industry. 1, 2, because of our unique qualifications, you know, I'll just talk about myself, because of my unique qualifications as a pharmacist who now has health tech experience, I'm frankly never worried. So if there is, you know, a possibility, or if the time comes where I may undergo layoffs, I'm highly, highly confident that I'll be able to get another role pretty quickly, simply because of how unique my skill set is. And, you know, the work that I'm doing partially is to try to change that. I don't necessarily want to be like a unicorn. You know, I don't want to be rare. I want more of us to be in this space. But the reality is, right now, you know, my skills are highly unique, making me a very, very valuable candidate in the market. So I'm really not too worried about job layoffs. I think if I'm remembering back to 2018 when I graduated, that was actually a really hard time for pharmacists to even get retail positions. And people were fighting for that. So, you know, let's not pretend that there are, you know, industries don't go through cycles, right? Of, you know, sometimes it's harder to find positions. Other times it's easier. So I'll own up to the fact that, no, you know, you aren't impervious to layoffs, but I don't think any job offers 100% job security. And the reality is, again, when you come into this space, you are not competing against other pharmacists or other clinicians. You know, you're competing against people who are not clinicians. So by definition, you sort of like rise to the top of the candidate pool, right? When you are applying for these positions and you're kind of given, you know, an extra set of eyes because they like to see that, oh, wow, you're a clinician. That's super cool. And they'll likely give you a little bit of extra consideration over other candidates.
Well said. Thanks for sharing that. I didn't have anything to add to that. I was just going to continue on to like, yeah, because it's a little bit tough to, you know, just think about that. And, you know, for me, I don't want to make any comments where I'm not in that field to even know, I justify myself making a comment, you know?
No, I totally hear you. Yeah. Like I'm never, ever going to be the person who says, well, actually, maybe, but, you know, I'm never going to judge anyone, right, who wants to play it safe. And, you know, for example, I had a pharmacist reach out to me on Reddit, of all places, and she was telling me about how she's super interested and wants desperately to jump into tech. But guess what? The layoffs did scare her from last winter, and she's in a good union job right now, even though she's kind of burnt out from working as a pharmacist. She's in a union position. So for her, job security is more important than the other benefits of tech. And that is a personal decision we all have to make. But, you know, the reality is, you know, I have recruiters like regularly in my inbox on a daily basis. So I genuinely am never worried about my personal job security. But even if I were to be on the chopping block, I'm very confident in my ability to get a new role relatively fast.
So, you know, about getting roles fast and, you know, MedTech pivot, you know, moving on to the second year of MedTech pivot. Yeah. What are some of the things that you're like excited to share about?
Yes. So as you can tell, I get really excited and I love talking about this stuff. And I actually got recently inspired when I traveled to HIMSS this year. And I was able to have some really, really great discussion with health tech companies about, you know, wanting to maybe add more clinicians to their team, right? So my focus this summer is actually been to bring on more employers as partners to MedTech. So for the last year, we've been focusing on exciting clinicians so that they know that health tech is a potential avenue that they can pivot into. Over this next year, our focus, or MedTech's focus, is going to be on bringing on employers who are specifically interested in tapping into the MedTech Pivot network of clinicians and offering them special considerations for their job postings. So thinking of quality analysts, thinking of clinical specialists, thinking of EMR trainers or implementation managers, those kinds of roles. Over the next year or so, I'm really excited to bring on more employers who specifically want to interview the pharmacists and nurses and PAs of my network and sort of, you know, give them interviews for these roles. So that's something that I'm really, really excited to announce. And in fact, one of the employers I'm working with will be ready to start hiring as soon as July or August. I know that this is coming out later, but yeah, once we, you know, we have one, and I'm hoping to close out the year with 10 partner employers. And ideally where we're moving, right, is every pharmacist or pharmacy student listening knows very familiar with the process of getting a residency, right? You know, you go through an organization, you do interviews, and there are all these hospitals who want to bring on new grads. Some of you are also familiar with the process of getting a fellowship, you know, where you go through a process and there are all these pharmaceutical companies that want to bring you on and, you know, train you and everything pharma. And the vision for MedTech Pivot would be, you know, ideally, we have these partner employers who want to, you know, provide a really, really steady funnel for new pharmacists to be able to have these entry-level roles in tech as well. So that's kind of like year three, but year two right now, yeah, we're bringing on partner employers who want to specifically interview the clinicians in my network and offer them these roles that I previously talked about.
Thanks for sharing that. That sounds really cool that you're able to like get these partners up. so great to hear that, you know, you're able to do that. And I'm looking forward to kind of seeing how that goes and how many people you're able to to help with that.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, right now, you know, a lot of what I'm doing is just getting the word out, you know, and always expanding the network with quality candidates. You know, folks can submit their resume. There's not like it's not an in-depth application, right? It's literally just submit your resume and you're part of the network. And what these employers are doing is paying for my expertise. So they'll come and have specific job requirements. And then they look to me for recommendations of who to potentially interview for those roles. So, you know, this is always completely free for job seekers. It's really about employers gaining special access to you or to my network. So it's just something that I think is just highly needed and not something that we see in the market today. And, you know, I just think there's no reason that this can't exist, you know, a dedicated place for clinicians and tech companies to connect.
Awesome. Awesome. So, you know, if the people who are listening to this podcast want to be part of that and want to learn more, like how do they do that?
Yeah, I have my website, medtotechpivot.com, and there is a job seekers section right on the homepage, and folks can just submit their application right then and there. I also always offer just standard 30-minute time that people can put right on my calendar if they just want to have a chat or just talk. That will always be available as well. So just medtotechpivot.com, and they should be able to find that right on the menu.
Awesome. So I'll be sharing that into our show notes. So for anyone who's interested, but you know, to be respectful of your time, I'd like to thank you again so much for, you know, sharing all this information, sharing about your journey, and then just sharing those other ways of getting from med to tech. And, you know, thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Thank you so much, Tony. This has been such a great time talking with you. Thank you so much, Tony. Have a good one.
Hope you enjoyed this episode of the Pharmacy IT and Me podcast. If you did, please rate us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or anywhere you're listening to this podcast. It really helps us reach more people who might be interested in learning more about pharmacy informatics and technology. If you would like to suggest a topic or somebody to be on the podcast, feel free to reach out to me on social media. I can be best reached on LinkedIn. Until next time, remember, technology is the tool, patient care is the goal.